there's a movement happening. Some call it Reformation. Others call it Holy Discontent. We call it the Resistance. Traditions and harmful teachings have kept the bride captive for centuries. We will explore these systems and contrast them with God's design. Join us as we discuss God's patterns for life, ministry, and most importantly, His church. We will do this with scripture, testimony, music, and satire. We are resisting the system and embracing the design. We are the Resistance. Welcome back to the Resistance Radio Show on the Reformation Radio Network. Thank you for joining us. I've got Terry,
shoot,
Mark Sanford,
what's up,
Jason,
hi,
and myself. Hi.
Hey.
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 So I had a serious issue on Facebook this week. I went on and there was this picture of Josie in this dress and bonnet, and it was like, oh my goodness, that is the cutest thing I think I've ever seen in my life. Did you see it?
I didn't.
Josie being my 2-year-old daughter.
Yeah, baby Jo, which she now won't let me call her that.
No, she's Jojo.
She's Jojo.
She clarifies.
I call her baby Jo, and she says, no, broke my heart. But then again, she has grown up. What is she now?
Two.
It's six, a terrible two. Time. She's they six, start two. To become independent. And
yeah. Well, the most ridiculous thing about that dress is she had it for like 2 months now, and it came with a bonnet. It's a little Amish dress. And I've been trying to get her to wear a bonnet because her mom refuses to ever wear bonnets. And I just, you know, they're cute.
They
and so I'm like, hey, you know, you want to wear your hat? And she's like, no, I don't want it. I'm like, okay. And every time, that's all she ever said. And then the other day, she just, on her own will, just picks it up and puts it on and says, I'm a farmer.
That's why she didn't want to wear it. She was afraid you'd put her out in the field to work.
Yeah, but then she wanted to go outside while she was a farmer so she could show everybody.
Well, it was really cute. I'm glad you put it up on Facebook so I could see it. Otherwise, I'd have missed it, and it made my day.
Yeah.
Mark Sanford, what's new with you? You don't have to tell everybody that. We already know.
There's not a whole lot going on with me.
Really?
Just running these businesses, running these crews.
We got a bunch of them too, don't we?
Yes, we do.
All of a sudden.
Started some new guys, got a new paint crew going.
That's good.
They're working out well.
Awesome. Lots of people getting help. Hey, we bought some houses today.
Hey.
We did. We bought three.
Sometimes we do that.
Well, we've been trying to buy these. We got an option on them over a year ago with the city, some LRA-owned properties. We've been trying to buy them since June 1st. That's how long it took to close, cash purchase. Then there were issues that they had to clean up, and we were going to buy seven, and we closed on three, and the three more, they're trying to get the titles cleaned up. Apparently, there's a big mess on a lot of those. I did not know that. You know, when the city takes these properties, and some of them were taken years and years and years ago,
right.
So they're there, and they've had all these kinds of issues on the title registration, scrivener's errors in the deeds, and you know, improper foreclosures, improper notifications, and all this stuff. And the title companies won't insure title over them, you know, because of all those problems. So they try and clean that up, and that's what we've been going through. It's a new eye-opening experience for me. It's no wonder the city has such a hard time selling LRA property, city-owned stuff.
Right.
But we got three of them. One of them's a live-over, so that live-over is basically a business space on the bottom and a big apartment up above, and then two small houses, which we'll put people into.
Yeah.
Which is pretty exciting. So, you guys got anything else you want to talk about before we get into the super serious stuff and Mark leaves?
I don't think so. It's just, I mean, wood shop's been working a lot this week.
It has. It's good. It's got a bunch of orders it's got to finish.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Yeah, it's slammed. it's like if you guys want some recycled pallet wood furniture, don't call us until at least October.
Right.
Because we couldn't do anything between now and then.
When you call us, be flexible.
Absolutely. We're a work in progress, aren't we?
Indeed.
But unless you have a whole bunch of really, really good equipment that you just want to donate, then call me.
Right away. And deliver. So it's been good. We got a lot of our lawn care crews have been really cranking it, taking care of a lot of property that isn't ours and making the place look good. Go drive through Hyde Park. It's starting to look really good around there. I mean, it's amazing how just taking care of the landscape can make things look so much different. Our new business project's coming along.
My brain was trying to function while you were talking.
Well, don't let that happen.
It's uphill battle right now. So
Once you're over the hill, you'll pick up
speed. We talked, was that last week when we had the interview with Zach Winters and Jason Barrow? So
sure was.
The lady that was traveling with them, their nanny, who was also a musician named
Kavina Found.
Kavina Found. So when she came into the cafe, and it's not, I'm not like bragging on our cafe or anything.
You should.
But she's like, wow, this place is really nice. And I was like, well, I think
so. Not a dump like
so.
I expected.
No, she didn't say that. And But it was just like, you know, I just kind of went back over with her, kind of the challenges of getting it open and everything. But then, you know, once it did open, of just, you know, one of the things that I like about it is that it is a nice place. Like, it's, you know, it's clean. It looks nice. You know, I'm pretty sure we're friendly to all our customers.
We are. Most of them.
And,
are.
Yes, as much as we can be. And, you know, it's just a nice looking space, you know, inside, outside. It's a great building. And I just told her, I'm like, that's, for me, that's a big deal. It just tells people, yes, really nice stuff can be here. Like, stuff can change, and it can change for the better, and it can change for the better and stay that way. It's not like, oh, look, good stuff. Oh, buy good stuff.
Right.
Anyway.
So the cool thing is that across the street, diagonally across the street from the cafe, is a building that's vacant that we're working in partnership with the same people that own the cafe, ND Consulting. And we're going to have a very unique second-hand store. Because it's not going to be like a thrift store like a Goodwill or a Salvation Army or anything like that, even though it will have some of that stuff in there, household items and things that people in the neighborhood need to have a good resource on inexpensively. But it's also going to have reconditioned items, things that we can find, architectural things we can make furniture out of and different things. It's going to have repurposed
really,
materials.
Really creative stuff.
Yeah, a lot of creative stuff. But everything will be it'll be on its second chance. There won't be anything that'll be on its first time around. That's not what we're doing there. It's not new product. Everything is going to have been in original use, discarded, or being found and repurposed again. It's going to be called Second Chance. It's going to be awesome. We got good news on that today because there was a huge issue with power in the back, and they had transformer up against one of the buildings, and they had power lines laying on the gutters, and we thought that was going to be a nightmare to try and get them fixed, and they actually fixed it. It's done as of today. It took them like a week. Awesome. Kudos to Ameren for that one. So that's going to help us move that forward. Maybe be open in time for your Christmas shopping needs, if we're lucky. But it is about that kind of a time frame. I think it might happen. Might actually happen.
So I walked into our cafe the other day and walked in on a conversation between a couple of people basically about that space and about how they overheard somebody saying what it was going to be, and they were really excited. And
Were they right about what it was going to be?
Yeah.
Wow. That's good. We haven't told that many people.
Then they started asking me questions about it, and I was like, yeah, this is going to be pretty cool. And they were like, man, we're just excited to have more good stuff.
I think it'll be good. It'll be good for the neighborhood because it'll serve a couple purposes. One is it'll keep drawing people into that neighborhood off the highway for something unique, and they'll start continue to spend money there, which is what we're already seeing happen with the cafe. But the other thing is it'll serve a purpose for the residents in the neighborhood. Hopefully we can have some decent used appliances and things that are really necessities of life that they'll have a source for inexpensively, you know, pots and pans and different things and baby stuff, what have you. So that'd be good. I'm done with our little bits and pieces of fodder if you guys are ready to move on. Okay, so this week our topic is a very serious topic. And we think that it can be discussed well on the radio because we know of people that have done it in the past, which, you know, 30 years ago, Rich Bueller in Los Angeles from a show called Talk from the Heart was very instrumental in my wife and I's journey spiritually because he talked about pain and how it affects spiritual life and ministry. And it's become a part of our ministry is dealing with people in pain. Mm-hmm. And our experience in ministry is that we don't run into too many people that are not affected by the pain of their past.
No.
Yeah.
No.
The very high percentage of people have unresolved pain from their past. And most people don't understand how it affects them.
Right.
They know they have it. Their whole life has been trying to hide it from other people that they have it.
Yeah. Well, especially if they didn't have a very dramatic event.
Yes. Especially like, if it was gradual.
Was my experience. I didn't have, I mean, to the best of my knowledge, I didn't have a very dramatic painful event in my past.
Right.
I just had
subtle, you weren't kidnapped,
more subtle things,
or whatever.
And they just build up over time. And I think that can, in some instances, just be harder for people. It's like, well, I don't understand why I do the things that I do or whatever. And
because they're looking for like, oh, I didn't have that like lightning strike experience. Right.
But we're going to talk about both levels of that because there is the lightning strike experience. There is the gradual buildup of pain, and both can have similar effects. That's the interesting thing is that I think what Rich Bueller discovered all those years ago when he did this on the radio for all those years and wrote a couple books about is that there is a pattern of behavior that can be identified, especially in people who are pursuing Christ that have a lot of pain in their past. Mm-hmm. You can see certain things in their lives that they do, regardless of what the source of their pain was, and they may do it on different levels, and there's different manifestations, which we're going to talk about here in a little while. But it is such an important part of our ministry. I don't think you can effectively minister and set captives free without understanding how pain affects people's life. Do you guys agree with that?
Yes. Because it. I mean, for me, through our experiences with ministering to people, my own just progress with it is that I think that a lot of pain isn't maybe necessarily like physical. It's more. It can be, but I think that the real pain of it is it's attacking your very self, like your very core of your identity.
Who you are, part of you, really.
Yeah. And I think whatever tears away at that, that's what starts to really impair people.
So let me describe what kind of pain we're talking about, because that's a good point. You know, we're talking pain in general terms, and people may not understand out there what we're saying. But we are saying that it has a transformational effect on people. So here are some very public and common examples of this. All right, this effect of pain on people. People go to war, and this is very much in the news lately, and they're often traumatized by it. Now, some are calling this effect the PTSD or post-traumatic stress disorder. Here's the thinking is that due to the intense trauma suffered during the time in combat, memories continue to disturb people after they're removed from the battle. Now, most people accept that. Nobody is saying, oh, that's a made-up thing. I think everybody really understands after, you know, two world wars and Vietnam and Korea and Iraq and Afghanistan that it's a real deal. You go into a place, your emotions and your mind are so disturbed by the horrors that you experience that it affects you afterwards. It changes who you are and how you relate to everything around you. So that's a very common example. Many who have experienced trauma have experienced some of the effects of pain in their life. So example, when you're violated, you have reactions to that violation, no matter what it is. Let's just, say it's assault, kidnapping, or even suffering through a house fire or an auto accident. For example, you might have lingering effects of any of those events in your life. If you were in an auto accident, you may have an aversion to wanting to drive at night or whatever would remind you of what happened, or to get in a certain car or with a certain person. If you had been assaulted, you may not want to walk alone at night anymore. Things that you used to normally do, you may not want to do. So the pain has basically changed and altered and affected your life. On some of the more serious things, you may actually end up with flashbacks or nightmares as well. Mm-hmm. And people might experience fear in certain situations or around certain types of people based on their experience of pain. And these type of traumas are commonly known, and their effects are even expected or considered normal reactions for those events. I don't think anybody who, you got kidnapped, we expect you to be normal the day after.
Right.
I think people understand there's lasting effects of pain. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing in that is the type of pain that we're talking about is not commonly known. It's not like you had an auto accident and all your friends know your car got crashed, right?
Yeah.
The type of pain we're going to talk about tonight is the type of pain you keep hidden.
Mm-hmm.
It's the stuff that happens to you at an early age, and it still has the same effects or can have similar effects on you. So we're going to go and we're going to do a song, because we always put music into everything we do to try and open hearts and eyes of what we're talking about. We're going to do a bunch of songs that relate to different things about pain and the effects of pain tonight. Jason, what are we starting off with?
We are starting off with Beautiful Eulogy. The song is According to God.
I'm a believer, sometimes I believe the lies of the deceiver. The lies of seeds, when they sprout, they lead to seasons of spiritual amnesia. Deep-seated self-doubt, it creeps in my conscience, feeds my fear, and keeps me up at night conquered by critical thoughts. My mind is prone to conjure when it wanders, watching my failures playback on repeat. I try to change the chain of events, but can't rewind to find the delete. Button to push, I'm on the edge. It's like the world is about to end. I'm in the middle of Armageddon, with no arms, no weapons, no armor for protection. It's the testing of my faith, and I know the answer, but instead I'm just guessing. Like I forgot that God was my father, and I was set apart for his own possession. His word is my armor and my protection against the enemy's deception. But still I question, how could I receive such an incredible blessing when I feel like I'm less than? Because I went through a divorce, am I a second-rate Christian? I know that's a lie, so I won't listen. Through Christ I'm forgiven, I'm being formed into his image. According to God, I was called from the darkness into his marvelous light. He is near to the brokenhearted and faithful to finish what he started.
Thank you. misplaced anger and rage, dealing with a whole of emotional consequences based on the way I was raised. A feeling for affection and affirmation, adjusted performance to get attention and gain some sort of acceptance, but found I was always rejected and pushed away. Deep scars, feelings of not belonging, caused tall emotional walls, and any attempt to recover from the loss of my confidence was incredibly small. The residual effects of abandonment had me observing my character flaws and viewing them all as insufficiently capable of relating or growing with God. I believe these lies to be true for me. My experience was the proof for me, up to the point where I could sense Christ's relentless love and complete pursuit of me, and spoke to me, offering me hope and life through his word, showing me his beauty, changing my perception and giving me perspective of the way that God truly viewed me. A man who was prized and pardoned and chosen before the world's foundation, his own possession, his royal priesthood. I'm part of his holy nation. I'm his friend, I'm valued and completely cared for, enough for Christ to purchase. According to God, I'm an adopted child with intimate access, created with purpose.
They talk about lies, which is, I mean, lies, a big part of pain, because that's what pain does, is it changes what you believe. But then also, I think in the second verse, I guess, what, the second half?
Something like that.
Whenever Odd Thomas, who's the other rapper, took over, just talking about, he basically was just laying it all out, like, hey, this is what happened to me, and this is what its effects were. And so, I mean, it's really cool that he's recognizing that, but his story was, I mean, he had some issues with his dad, which he's explored in other songs and poems. It was, again, one of those things where there wasn't necessarily a very dramatic event, where it was this kind of successive events that were more subtle. And a lot of people, you know, would be like, well, why don't you just man up and just deal with it? But it's like, you don't understand, when you have something that's continuously happening over a long period of time that that attacks the core of who you are as a person, whether or not it looks dramatic to the outside, to that person, it tears away, and they have to respond, right? They still have to live and function every day, so they have to find ways to deal with that. And anyway,
absolutely,
I just like that it explores that.
So before the break also, we were talking about the outward types of pain that are very commonly experienced, but it's experienced in public. You know, auto accidents, you've been kidnapped, you came back from battle. All of these painful experiences, your friends and family know about them. They're, you know, your house fire, auto accident, things like that, that create these pain issues in your life, but everybody's around you, everybody's aware of it, and there's a lot more support. The pain we're going to talk about today is pain from early abuse in your life, and different kinds of abuse. The effects of being abused as a child can greatly shape who you are, and it can change the way you process information, how you approach relationships, how you view yourself, and how you view God. Now, the statistics are widely varied, and many times these events go unreported. So I feel very safe saying well over half the population suffers from this type of pain of their past, and I'm going to probably would agree with anybody who said it's more like 3/4.
Right.
I mean, might even be higher than that.
I mean, yeah. I mean, just like – I mean, it depends on what you want to classify it as.
Well, yeah, I was going to say it's all about definitions, because like when you define abuse – and you realize how many variations there are, emotional, verbal, sexual, physical, like that's a wide variety.
Yeah.
And so anyway, sorry.
No, it's fine. I'm just thinking about, you know, I have to think long and hard to know anybody that I know on a deep enough level to have explored this, to know anybody that hasn't been damaged by some kind of abuse.
Right.
Yeah.
Including my own children.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, right. Because even if it's not something that directly happens to you, it still affects if it's somebody you know, it affects you in those ways too, or it can.
Right.
So we're going to talk about why this is so important to understand this issue, especially in a ministry setting. If you don't understand pain and its effects in a ministry setting, then you're going to have a lot of unfruitful ministry. You're going to spend a lot of time with people that repeatedly fall back into their same behavior patterns, and you're going to probably develop a doctrine, well, they're just a work in process, and they're backsliding and all that stuff.
Right.
It's not what's happening. What's happening is they're never truly getting set free from the pain of their past and its effects.
Right.
Because built into each one of us is a need to be protected, cared for, and nurtured as we grow up.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, the human race does not pop out a baby and walk away from it. That's not the way it's designed. I mean, we have one of the longest nurturing cycles of any creature on Earth. I mean, we take our children and we continue to treat them under our care till they're 18, sometimes 39 years old. You know, nowadays, it just depends.
True.
It is true. However, I think that's by God's – some of that, not the 39 thing, but some of that's by God's design, because the family, the church, and the community – is supposed to be a safe and caring place for children to grow up.
Well, I mean, you can't say that it's not if you actually read the Bible. I mean, yeah, if you want to, like, nitpick, and maybe there's people here and there, but you look at the church after, you know, Christ was resurrected, and all the stress of, you know, respect, love, care, you know, share your life, your experiences, your mournings, and your celebrations, share all those things. It's like, I mean, if you're talking about church, it's like, why? How could that possibly not apply to you and your family and your kids?
Right. So we're going to go from the theological perspective first. It's important to understand that God has expressed his purpose for instituting marriage in the first place in Malachi 2:15, where he says that he wanted to have godly offspring raised.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, if you're going to raise godly offspring, they have to be cared for, they have to be nurtured, they have to be protected, they have to grow up in the thing God designed to be the vehicle, which is the church. The church ultimately makes up a community. Mm-hmm. So therefore, all of those things should be in place, and they should be nurturing, caring, and protecting of the children that are around them. But Satan, on the other hand, is a destroyer.
Mm-hmm.
And his agenda is to destroy. So he infiltrates our families, our churches, our communities by sowing seeds that grow into sin and wreak havoc on the lives of our children, our grandchildren. That's what Satan's doing on a daily basis. Now, you may look at a bigger picture, and I often look at a bigger picture, and say, oh, you know, Satan's destroying mankind and humanity and the planet and all these other things. But he's doing that. Don't ever lose sight of the fact that he's doing that one person at a time.
Right.
And then through the people that he's able to infiltrate and get control in their lives and get them to think in the same way but the same lies, then he does all those other things.
Yeah.
So really God's ultimate plan is if we intervene on the individual level, creating communities called churches – that's how we defeat Satan.
Yeah, and if those communities are, you know, I don't remember the verse, but it talks about, you know, each joint held together by, you know, what it's providing.
Right.
It's like, so if each community is knitted, you know, to use an overused term, together by relationships that are really real, you know, discipleship and, you know, spiritual authority in place, but like, not like, oh, I'm the pastor, you have to listen to me, but like spiritual authority where it's like, wow, I've seen God move through you in meaningful ways, so I'm going to entrust myself to you to help me come to know him better.
Right.
And people interacting and cooperating. Right, you know, and it's like, that's a much stronger community to carry everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So Satan is doing all these things, trying to get into the lives of families, individuals and families and churches, so he can destroy children and grandchildren, because that's the next generation. If he gets them early enough, he's got them. Much harder for them to get away from him. And then what he does is he uses the roots of sin that he grows to be – which are really these roots of sin are grown. They're the fruit of pain. That's what they are.
Mm-hmm.
So he can inflict pain in somebody's lives. He can entice them more easily to sin, to not trust God, to not listen to God, to not rely on God, to not trust the people who have been put there to protect him or to protect them and to nurture them and to separate from them. Therefore, that soil of pain that's growing the roots of sin will then grow to reproduce more sin.
Yeah, and I think what I've found in my own life is that, like, as I was digging through my own past pain, God's like, your pain has driven your iniquity.
Absolutely.
You know, so my propensity to sin, my want to sin, was driven by my not dealing with the truth of what has happened to me.
Right.
So,
and we're going to get into that, because there's no way as a kid you understand the depth of what's happening to you. You just don't. One of the most common problems is that people want to look at what happened to them through their adult eyes. And then they want to say, oh, well, I should have known, or this is what it meant, and this is what happened, and this must be what I thought. And it's like, no, you were a kid. You're looking at it as an adult, and you're logically reasoning with a much better understanding of situations and people. But kids are kids. They don't know.
And I think the other thing is that, like, Satan doesn't have to do much. Like, he, you know, obviously when he gets somebody caught in a pattern of sin, and that person inflicts pain on another person, then he just has to create the damage and then come in at the right opportunity.
That's it.
And
he's then he's roaring. He's roaming about like a right. lion, looking for who he can devour. What right. do you think that means? He's looking for the opportunities
right, exactly.
that he's created right. so that he could swoop in and create more damage and yep. have more victims.
That's exactly. Yeah. What I'm learning, because like my, you know, my daughter, she's two now, and so I'm learning. I mean, yeah, they don't understand, but they are incredibly perceptive. Like, I'm astonished with her, and then my nieces, who are just, you know, a year and 2 years older than her, are just, they're very perceptive of people and their interactions and all that stuff, even though they don't have full comprehension of what all that means, you know. But, like, I see that she understands on a pretty deep level whenever, like, my wife's not feeling well. And
right.
she perceives that, and she perceives all these other stuff. And then, but then since she doesn't have, like, full comprehension of all the ins and outs, it's like, if she's being mean to her brother, I'm yell at her. I'm like, Josie, stop that. You're being mean. And then she'll, like, sit and pounce. She'll be like, I mean. I'm like, well, right. no, you're not. I don't know what it really means to her, but, like, on my end, it's like her basically accepting the fact that she is mean. And I'm like,
right.
no, you're not. You are not mean. You're being mean. You're doing something that you shouldn't do, you know, already. At 2.5 or whatever, she's through all this confusion of, you know, interaction and what's good and what's not good to do. She's
you,
like,
you told me that story yesterday, and I was just like baffled by the very truth that if a kid is
they
told,
relate it to it,
right? Exactly. Well, it's not just that. It's
and
like they
that.
Think that that is them. They the, take on right. the definition.
So the other thing to ponder for a minute is at 2 years old, think about how dependent she is upon relationships for her care and nurturing.
Oh, absolutely.
I know when she's had a bad day and if she's mad at me for some reason because of it, it's really easily affect the way that she'll treat me. But when she comes in and she's had a good day, she's running down the hall screaming my name and grabbing me by the legs, giving me a big hug. Because relationship is everything to that age group. And what happens in this pain we're talking about is relationship gets violated and the kids don't have any other place to put that.
Right.
They don't have an – like, okay – as we talk about ministry and we teach our missionaries to – you have to learn how to deal with conflict if you're going to be in ministry because mm-hmm. Christ creates conflict. Mm-hmm. The gospel creates conflict. But as an adult, we can learn how to adjust to the fact that people are being mean to us, mm-hmm. right? And it's not easy. It doesn't mean that there's no hurt there, but it's not like somebody's mean to us and then we're completely out of the ballgame. We learn how to adapt and deal because we understand Jesus and the concept of suffering and the concept
to learn
of grace.
To love your enemies.
All of those different things. But a kid doesn't understand any of those things. So the only thing that they have to deal with is the economy they're in, which is one of relationship, care, and nurturing. They know, so they know that, you know, Jason, they know that you provide for them and that you care for them and that you nurture them. And so they run to you for that. And when that's violated, it really damages who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And it does it at an early age. Now, it doesn't have to be two. It can be older than that, too. It's just we'll talk about that here in just a little bit. So Satan's basically using pain as a tool to grow sin. And then he uses sin as a tool to inflict more pain. And this is how he works. So if you don't understand this and you're going out and trying to do ministry, mm-hmm. then you're just basically throwing stuff at a wall hoping it sticks
right.
because you're not understanding. And you're just feeling like, you know what? God is good. He'll figure it out. Well, he wants you to figure it out. So because Jesus came to destroy the works of the devil. That's 1 John 3:8. And it's a beautiful thing because all of those things we're talking about, works of the devil.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they are. And Jesus came, appeared for the express purpose is to destroy those things. Now, he formed the church to be a tool to eradicate sin, not from the world, because ultimately only he can do that. And it's very clear that he's not going to do that. There's going to be sinful people judged even at the end. But he came and created the church to be a tool to eradicate sin from his followers' lives.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the works of the devil. So he formed the church to steward and rule over the earth, and in that process to help set captives free from their pain, from their sin. And through Christ, we pastor our communities and we stand against the works of the devil that seek to destroy us and our children. So,
can I add something before
you can, and then we're going to go to break again because this is a good stopping point for
us. So I just, like, as you're saying that, like, this is a little bit veering off from pain specifically, but you're talking about, like, Jesus coming to destroy the works of the devil in order to, you know, basically remove sin from his people, and it's like, I just never thought about it that way before. What an amazing thing, because before you had the law that basically said, this is sin. And, you know, it even says, you know, that was...
And here's what you do when you screw up.
Yeah, that didn't actually solve anything. Jesus is basically saying, here's how that gets conquered. Hear how that gets put, because it's like, okay, I'm living in sin. I'm doing these sinful things. I don't want to do them. I'm doing them. It's causing me pain. It's causing other people's pain. It's interrupting my relationship with God and all these other people. And it's like, I don't, whatever.
And Jesus, then Christ, like, meets you there and changes you.
Yeah.
So you don't do that anymore.
And a lot of that, I think, is just through grace. And when people ever actually come to terms with the grace, it changes everything. And it's not just this cheap, free, oh, cool, everything's taken care of kind of thing, but it just demolishes all that crap you have wrapped around you.
Well, I think the restoration of God's Spirit is what is...
It's what makes it all possible. Right. And then you have to be intentional. You know, there's a lot of unintentional Christianity. You know, the only intentionality is I'm going to show up at church once a week or once a month or once a year, whatever it is.
Well, that's just another law, and the law we've already, you know.
Right. The intentionality has to be, no, I got stuff in me that Satan put there. I want it out. And the way I get it out is I press into Jesus and I abide by whatever it is that the agreement with his law is, not conflict of law in my life. So it's telling me what to do. It's because I want to live that way, because that's the perfect way.
Right.
So I'm going to just say, have your way with me, and not, I'm not going to strive to be sinless. That would be just silly. That would contradict everything in Scripture. You cannot strive to be sinless, but you can rest in grace, which allows you to be transformed so that you're not seeking after sin, and that you are sensitive to who it is that you're hurting, and you are willing to take the suffering and the pain and the hurt from the jabs that come back, and you're willing to take the risk to stand against evil in your communities and to stand for what's right. And all of those things together form family, churches, and communities. And whenever that happens and that operates, it's a beautiful thing, because the children and the grandchildren are protected. And then Satan loses his grip in a generation. And right now, what's the problem is that we don't see that functioning anywhere.
No.
So he's never lost his grip in this generation. He's actually gotten it more and more. I mean, it's stronger and stronger.
Right.
So what's our next song, Jason?
Oh, you want to do that now?
Yeah, new song, and then we got to.
It's the song that you wanted, so I'm going to let you introduce it.
It is Jars of Clay, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the one? And it's called Dead Man, and it's got a subtitle called Carry Me. Mm-hmm. And this is just, to me, this is like the feeling of despair that comes from striving for this freedom that Jesus came to pay for. That's my opinion of the song. Yep. I think that really what he's trying to tell you is that somebody else has got to carry you into that. And it's not going to be me. It's going to be Jesus.
Bam.
January 1, I got a lot of things on my mind. I'm looking at my body through a new spy satellite. Try to lift a finger, but I don't think I can make the call. So tell me if I move, 'cause I don't feel anything at all.
I was born into a system constructed for failure. It's a sinking ship being manned by drunken sailors. An escape artist behind the bars of a jailer. An asthmatic attack and they withhold the inhaler.
Can you believe that they let us have 2 hours on the radio to just talk?
No, I can't actually.
I don't believe it either.
Pretty much every week.
It makes my head hurt.
But you know what? I just thought of this. This is really important. You guys need to contemplate this. We are all in here. We have no idea if they're broadcasting it or not. We just don't know.
Well, my wife can hear it on my headphones. They hand us a recording
and say, here, that's you're done. Thanks, guys. And we're like, hey, we're a radio show. Anybody out there listening? Just, I need to
prove it.
Let's just confirm every week, even if we do a lot of prep during the week, it's like, I'm working, I got kids, I'm all whatever. And then we come here, I'm like, oh yeah, we do a radio show.
We do. And we talk about important stuff sometimes, like tonight. This is really an important topic. You know, I know that because we're different, and that's the nicest way of putting it.
I'm normal.
You know, some people don't like listening to when we talk about church structure and stuff like that. Some do. Some really like that because they're like, oh, I've seen it forever.
Last week when we had the interview, the pre-recorded interview, I went into Ollie, our sound lady, and was like, oh, we got a weird show this week. And she's like, well, you always do. It's you guys.
See, look at her. She's
I was like, all right, Ollie, tell me how you really feel.
But here's the best part about that was whenever I went in there after the show, she says, I wish you guys hadn't done the recorded thing because I just miss listening to you guys. So that was a really nice thing.
She can't take that back.
But you know what? She's listening over the microphones. It doesn't mean they're still broadcasting anything. She's part of the thing to convince us. She's just listening over the microphone.
It's a conspiracy.
Ollie, do they actually like put this on the airwaves? She doesn't know. She's like, I don't know. That's really comforting. All right. Back onto our serious topic, talking about pain.
For?
in order to destroy the works of the devil, we have to understand how he's working. Because if we don't understand how he's working, then we're not going to understand what his works are.
Right.
And if we don't understand what his works are, then we're not going to be having the wisdom to see how to destroy those works.
I think also, like, you know, like I was saying, it's like I think that would cause people to invalidate experiences of people that aren't dramatic.
Correct. Yep. If they're not like visible, oh, that affected you? Why? That happened to me and it didn't affect me. And I think a lot of times people will say that, but it really did affect them.
Yeah.
They don't see the effects. Look, I haven't had – okay, so I've a couple of things in my ministry. I'll talk in extremes, but I'm pretty sure this is accurate. I don't remember having anyone who wasn't aware that they had pain, although I know that can happen. I don't think mm-hmm. I've had anybody – and my wife could – correct me because she always ministers with me in this, that totally forgot mm-hmm. that they had pain. They may have forgotten a lot of it or blocked a lot of it, they knew, but that can happen.
In my case, like I forgot the day that a lot of my destruction happened and God had to show me that, but I knew I had pain.
Right.
Right. But I'm saying there are people who have traumatic rape experiences, totally block it out of their memory.
Right.
Go through life not knowing why they do what they do. But I have not ministered to them. So they all knew they had pain. They may not have understood exactly where that pain came from.
Right.
But I have yet to meet anybody who had pain that was affecting their lives in the way that we're talking about that knew exactly what it was doing to them.
Right.
They just feel – many of them just felt like, hey, I'm over that. You know,
yeah.
Well, that don't affect
that's me. The nature of pretending.
And that doesn't come unless you're just like flat on the floor on your face before God, or if you're in relationships that you actually allow to become deeper, because you're not going to see everything. So you need other eyes, whether it's God Himself or whether it's Him working through His body. You need
which
other
is what He designed to do it
in a good relationship to where they can call you out on, hey, why do you do that? Why do you act like that? Why do you respond like that? Why do you say that thing? You know, because if it's just a stranger, you're going to be like, well, lay off me.
And there's all kinds of identifiable behavior patterns that are the result of pain that I've come to be able to recognize as I sit down with somebody and start to try and disciple them. It's like, oh, I can see, you know, where that's coming from. And then it's a matter of leading them into recognizing that mm-hmm. pain and that it's affecting them.
Right.
And the hard part is when they finally do recognize it, their pain's exposed, it rushes back on them, and there's a fight or flight reaction to that, and a lot of times they just run.
Right.
It's like, oh my goodness, I've been found out, I'm out of here. And a lot of times they hit a wall and just they're like, I'm done, I ain't doing that, I'm not going there, you can't, I'm just going to live my life the way I am because that's too hard.
Right.
And then it's a matter of prayerfully, skillfully using spiritual gifts in the body of Christ to move them from where they are in discovery to where they can be in healing. And a lot of spiritual warfare on mm-hmm. that behalf, because Satan's got a hold on them.
Right.
All right, so I believe God's designed the human mind to endure a lot of pain. I think God knew that Satan would attack us in this way, so He made us with the ability to endure painful events. So when we understand the way that our brain handles trauma, then we can better see the effects, right, mm-hmm. of the pain that's in our lives and how we have to deal with it. And when we suffer painful events as a child, we go through a process that has certain impacts on our mind and our emotions. If these impacts are met with love, protection, and nurturing, the harmful results can be limited and even overcome. So we had an event in our life, one of our children was abused, and it was met, I think, that way, with mm-hmm. love and protection and nurturing. And I don't think the results are nearly as bad as if it hadn't been.
Right.
You know? Doesn't mean everything's perfect.
I think the most critical thing in that is, like, whenever it's met with love and protection and nurturing after, it's easier for them to face the truth of what happened.
Yeah.
When it's not, that's what doesn't happen. The defenses are built up.
Right. That is key, because it's like, yes, this happened. Yes, it was wrong. And yes, we all care that it happened and that it was wrong, and we're going to help you, rather than you're just floating out in space. So you got to deal.
Right.
So
when it happened to my daughter, it was like, hey, we're all on your side. Whatever you want to do, that's going to, you know, they're never going to be a part of your life. If that's your choice, we're there. I'll make sure they ain't never going to be a part of your life. I mean, I'm going to protect you. And that was a big and important thing, I think, because
mm-hmm.
that gave her room to process and adjust.
I think that's, I guess, I don't know, connected to kind of what Jason was talking about earlier with Josie, and it's that we develop our identity and our I guess, who we are based a lot on the people around us. And so if the people around you are loving and nurturing and caring, you're a lot more likely to handle those painful experiences well.
Right.
Well, it's trust. It's mm-hmm. built on trust and violation of trust, and we're going to talk about that in the next hour. And I'm sure this whole thing is going to carry over into another week, maybe two, because this is a big topic.
Mm-hmm.
We're just scratching the surface. So in the few seconds we have left before the heartbreak at the top of the hour, what I wanted to say was if we meet these impacts with love, nurturing, and protection, then the results can be limited. If they're ignored, then the mind takes steps to defend the person so they can continue in life.
Right.
And on the other side of the hour, we're going to continue with this thought and get to what happens whenever abuse occurs.
Resistance is hosted by Dr. Terry Goodwin, Mark Sanford, Jason Callahan, and Mark Goodwin. Our theme music is The Resistance by Josh Carrolls and is licensed by Marmoset Music. This episode of The Resistance Radio Show was originally broadcast live on KXEN 1010 AM in St. Louis, Missouri.
Thank you for being a part of The Resistance. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or directly from our feed at theresistanceradioshow.wordpress.com. Find us on Twitter at Disciple Driven, or on Facebook at facebook.com/Disciple Driven Church, or on our website at DiscipleDrivenChurch.org. To learn more about our missionary work in the inner cities of America, please visit sunministries.org. You can email us directly at terry@DiscipleDrivenChurch.org.